The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me is Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, Alan Shatter, former Justice Minister, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and the Indo Daily podcast presenter. During the break, more information has emerged. The UK now saying that they are supportive of the strikes that the bombing strikes that the US undertook overnight in Iran, and also indicating that they do not believe that Iran should be in a position to have nuclear weapons, and asking Iran to return to the negotiating table. They're also apparently arranging flights for UK citizens out of Israel in the coming days. Meanwhile, as I said, the Taoiseach and Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Harris has sent us a voice note about the attacks overnight. This is what he had to say.
I'm very closely monitoring the situation in the Middle East following the military action by the US overnight. I think it's fair to say that the risk of an extremely dangerous spiral of escalation in relation to Iran and Israel is now more real and more likely than ever. And there's an urgent need for de-escalation, dialogue and diplomacy. I think most of the world, and certainly all of Europe, is clear in its view that Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. But the way you resolve this is through engagement, dialogue and negotiation. Today I will travel to Brussels to meet with European counterparts, where this will be a huge focus of our work in trying to outline what steps Europe can take next to play a constructive, helpful role at this very dangerous and very volatile moment for the world. I should also say that we're continuing to work with our embassies on the ground in the region to help any Irish citizen in need of assistance, and indeed to help those seeking to leave the region to do so, and do so safely.
There you go. That's the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, speaking to us in a voicemail sent in earlier on. Lynn Boylan, that line, an extremely dangerous spiral of escalation in the region. Is that how you'd characterise it?
It absolutely is. And I would echo what Carl Bildt said, the former Prime Minister of Sweden, and that, you know, Netanyahu is attacking Iran not to prevent a nuclear weapon, but actually to prevent a nuclear weapons deal with the US. And I think that is true. Do you know what I mean? Because what we're seeing now is an absolute escalation when all of the experts have said that Iran does not have the capability yet to develop a nuclear weapon. Of course, we don't want them to have the capability to develop a nuclear weapon. But this strike by an escalation by Donald Trump absolutely creates massive destabilization in the region and has huge consequences. But this is all about Netanyahu and deflecting from what's happening in Gaza, but also ensuring Netanyahu remains in power to carry out the devastation that he's carrying out across the region.
Now, what the Americans will point to is post the Trump abandonment of the pre-existing Iran-US nuclear deal, there has been a significant, massive increase in the enrichment of uranium by Iran. There can only logically be one reason for that increase in enrichment, which is the intent of a nuclear program. And what they will say they have done is, in a very surgical strike, ended that.
Well, but let's look at the facts, okay? So since 1992, Benjamin Netanyahu has been saying that Iran is on the brink of a nuclear weapon. He's been saying that for 30 years. He also said it about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq in 2002. In March, you had Tulsi Gabbard, the national security, the American US national security director, head of intelligence, saying that they were at least 3 years off from producing a weapon. David Albright, UN nuclear inspector, said at least 1 to 2 years. Rafael Grossi, DG of the International Atomic Energy Agency, said, "We do not at this stage have any tangible proof that there is a program or a plan to manufacture a weapon." So that's all of the experts are saying. And at the same time, you had a very clear appeal from the Iranians. And what we're hearing is Iran were keen to negotiate. I'm no defender of the Iranian regime, but the evidence would show that they were in a position to negotiate, that they wanted to go back to the 2015 deal that Barack Obama had negotiated. They're under pressure. They're in a desperate economic situation. The middle classes are unhappy. They were at the negotiating table. And this is, as I go back, Carl Bildt said, this is about Benjamin Netanyahu preventing that nuclear deal to be done, as opposed to actually really wanting a deal on nuclear weapons.
Although presumably, Alan, Benjamin Netanyahu will see this as a huge victory and a huge success. In fact, he has already come out to say effectively that.
Well, I think Linda's depiction of this is all quite bizarre, because she started off by telling us that Netanyahu attacked Iran to stop a nuclear deal. Now, President Trump quite clearly has been actively trying to effect a nuclear deal. he announced some days ago.
Although he did begin by abandoning one.
Well, he did, but we're now quite a number of years on, and we're a number of years on in circumstances where we now know Iran has significant stocks of enriched uranium. Yes, there are contradictory reports as to how close they are to having the nuclear bomb, but CENTCOM in the United States judged they could assemble one within a week if they chose to do so. If they had no interest in assembling nuclear bombs, why in the name of God have they continued this program of enrichment of uranium for many years? Why do they have centrifuges? Why do they have the Fordow plant hidden in the mountain, which required American buster bombs to attack it? And right up till Thursday of this week, I believe Trump hoped for some deal. But then the Iranians announced that we won't engage with the Americans unless Israel stops attacking our nuclear sites. Now, look.
Stops breaking international law.
Let me come back to international law in one moment, because I'd really love to deal with that issue. But let's finish this little point for a moment. There's one very particular problem. This Iranian regime for decades has been screaming death to Israel, death to America. And the Ayatollah has, for a very long time, been threatening Israel with ultimate, total and absolute destruction. And when you have someone developing nuclear weapons, you don't actually wait until they have the damn weapon and they bomb you with it and maybe kill 5, 6, 7 million people. What you do is you prevent them having the weapon. What the United
States.
But as
a counterpoint to that, Alan, do you not, if you want to draw somebody to the negotiating table, do you not invite them to do that without killing several of their top scientists during the process?
Well, what you do if you're Israel with the history of the Jewish people. The Jewish people have a history where during the 1930s they were being threatened by Nazi Germany and the rest of Europe went into appeasement mode. And then you had the concentration camps and there were appeals to bomb the gas chambers and the ovens in which nearly 6 million people died. A number were simply shot. They weren't killed in Auschwitz, the other concentration camps. And the world did nothing. Now, here you have a jihadist regime that surrounded Israel with proxies intent on its destruction that was close to developing a nuclear bomb. You had a president in America who I believe genuinely wanted to resolve this issue by dialogue and concluded dialogue was getting nowhere. And then what you had on Thursday, and I'll conclude on this and let others in, on Thursday you had the Atomic Energy Authority announcing that uranium had been identified in sites in Iran for which the Iranians could provide no explanation. That was last Thursday week, I should say. And I think that was the catalyst to where we are today.
Well, going back to the Holocaust is, again, a distraction from what Israel is doing right now, right this second,
well, you
to
see,
the Palestinian
Lynn, if you're
people.
An Israeli threatened and with atomic so, with atomic annihilation, it's not a distraction.
But, Alan, Israel's intent is to completely annihilate the Palestinian people.
Oh, no,
they're
that's
open
a different
about
issue.
That.
We'll come to,
the ethnic
I'm happy
cleansing
to deal with
of the
that.
Gaza Strip. You have now weaponized food. You're using the Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war.
Well, hang on for a second and let's deal with the attack overnight, because there is a separate, not separate, obviously connected, but a wider issue in terms of what's happening with Gaza. In response to the attacks on Iran, do you accept the contention that if you believe that there is a uranium being enriched, you know the route that the regime is therefore on, and you intervene as early as possible?
But Israel has breached international law in relation to Iran. So they targeted the Iranian embassy in Damascus in April 2024. That's a war crime. That's a breach of international law. Killed 16 people. They then have taken what they call preventative measures by striking Iran. That's a breach of international law. You can't take preventative measures against a country. You can't have a state like Israel that has decided that international law does not apply to it. Because if we allow Israel to get away with this, and I know Ursula von der Leyen's tweet, and I can't believe she tweeted it with a straight face when she said respect for international law is critical, because she clearly hasn't been paying attention to the ICJ and the ICC when it comes to Israel. So we cannot allow one single rogue state to decide that international law does not apply to it, because if that is the case, then why should any country, any state in the world comply with international law?
Okay, Alan, you want to talk about international law?
Yeah, I really do. And it's Lynn's extraordinarily selective narrative, one that she's been addicted to since the start of the Israel-Gaza conflict, which is really quite bizarre at this stage. And of course, I know she disagrees with Ursula von der Leyen, who has labelled Iran as the main source of regional instability. So let's deal with international law. Iran has effectively been conducting a covert war against Israel for years through its terrorist proxies, through Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the Houthis in Yemen, together with another group that lurks in Iraq. And Iran has been encouraging the mayhem in the Middle East that has taken place. It's not the friend of the Palestinian people, it's the enemy of the Palestinian people. Because Iran has stood in the way of any resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Lynn, you didn't complain about international law when Hezbollah, encouraged by Iran, armed by Iran, paid for by Iran, was firing thousands of missiles into Israel and putting our UNIFIL troops at risk. You don't complain about Iran providing ballistic missiles to the Houthis. You don't complain about the violation of international law in Hamas, not just committing an appalling atrocity on the 7th of October, which I presume you agree was appalling, but in Hamas continuing to retain hostages in Gaza. And by the way, Anton, what Irish news doesn't know, and no one's yet mentioning, is last night, while all of this was going on in Iran, the IDF in Gaza recovered three bodies of hostages held in Gaza. One, a 70-year-old woman who was murdered in Kibbutz Be'eri, a peacenik advocating peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Another was a 22-year-old young man who was murdered in the Nova Music Festival and whose body was taken to Gaza. Now, Lynn, if you wanted
the hostages to be released, what you would do is call on Iran to demand hostages. The thousands of Palestinian hostages as well should be released. So we call for release of hostages on all sides because Israel applies a military court to children. To Palestinian children and arbitrarily detains them for years, brutally tortures them. They have there's been cases of people being raped to death in Israeli prisons. So we have to condemn, and this is my point all the time, international law applies to everybody. The International Court of ICC had arrest warrants out for the leaders of Hamas as well for their actions on the 7th of October, and that was welcome.
Now,
but you cannot have the ICC having international arrest warrants for one side and then saying it's wrong that they have international arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Galan.
Of course, those warrants are no longer valid because of a decision made by the appeal court.
Okay, but hang on for a minute. The other issue...
And again, the Irish media isn't right about that.
We have that point. The other issue, of course, then, that continues is the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. And one of the points that the Taoiseach is making, and he's writing in the Mail on Sunday, obviously this written before the American attacks overnight, but nonetheless, I'm sure he stands over the sentiment. Tabitha Monaghan, he is saying that one of the things we need to be careful about is that this escalation of the conflict doesn't distract from the humanitarian disaster that is unfolding.
Yeah, and it's not the first time I think he has said that this week. And I think both Lynn and Alan have made those points that you in relation to the hostages and you in relation to what is happening in Gaza, is that what has happened here, and like even like you said, the newspapers this morning are now out of date. Even when the notes that we were reading this morning are out of date, it is such a fastly moving and developing situation. But yes, that I think there is a situation now because it is incredibly serious and there's no doubt about what happened in Iran, and now the repercussions that are going to happen are incredibly serious. But we are going to see the headlines grabbed as a result of this, and that there is a serious situation in Palestine now that is going to be, that is going to take play second fiddle, I think, now to this, because we don't know where this is going to go. We didn't anticipate, I think, that the US would take such quick action. Donald Trump, okay, he did leave G7, so we thought there was going to be some kind of progress or some kind of intervention going to come down the line. But we're talking maybe 2 weeks' time, and now this is after happening. When we talk about that, so I think, yes, it is going to be a distraction. And he has also mentioned not just what's happening in Gaza, but what's happening in Yemen, what's happening in the West Bank. There's a lot of situations.
Well, what of that, Lynn? Because there was evidence of maybe minor, but some effect of international pressure in respect of the humanitarian response in Gaza. And there seemed to be a minor amount of movement in the direction of further assistance. Do you think this will now take all of that pressure and attention?
This is absolutely what Benjamin Netanyahu wants to do. because the vision, the images of starving children, Israel could not say, oh, we bombed it because there was tunnels. We bombed it because they were being used as human shields. The images of starving children when there are trucks lined up at the border with aid, with medical supplies, with baby formula, is impossible to justify, impossible to lie about. And I think EU leaders knew that. They knew that the citizens on the ground would not accept it. And we did see that shift.
So when you say the citizens on the ground, do you mean within Europe or within Israel?
Citizens within Europe were absolutely clamouring and saying this is absolutely barbaric. The children are being starved to death. While a few kilometres up the road, there are Israelis eating out in fancy restaurants. So the pressure became enormous on EU leaders. You did see a shift. We at least seen the review of the EU-Israel Association Agreement. We now know that Israel, or the EU, has known since November 2024, although everybody knows if you look at your phone, but since November 2024, they know that Israel has been committing war crimes. So what we need to see happen now, next week, is a complete suspension of the EU-Israel Association Agreement and a two-way arms embargo if the EU is to be credible when it comes to international law. But my fear is Benjamin Netanyahu knew that was going to happen, and that's why now we have Iran being dragged into this conflict.
We've had a statement from, or rather the Iranian foreign minister has held a press conference to give you a sense of some of what he has had to say. He said the US holds full responsibility for the consequences of its actions after the overnight attacks. He said that the US launched its attack, quote, in the midst of a process to forge a diplomatic outcome. And he went on to say that not content with such malign actions, the United States itself has now opted for a dangerous military operation and aggression against the people of Iran. In doing so, the US administration holds sole and full responsibility for the consequences of its actions, including the Islamic Republic of Iran's right to self-defense. The Gaza humanitarian crisis, Alan, will this draw all of the attention and focus away from it and allow it to fester to a horrifying degree?
Well, I want to see this dreadful, awful Gaza-Israeli conflict over. It could have been over a long time ago. And people like Simon Harris, who have engaged in a never-ending rhetoric about it, the irrelevant multiple debates that have taken place in the Doyle, have contributed absolutely nothing to resolving the conflict. The conflict would be over very simply. And I wish this could happen, and it should happen. And it would happen if the Irish government had called in the Iranian ambassador and said to them, you've got to do this. And if all the EU approach had been to this. And what am I talking about? How does this conflict end? Very simply. Hamas, unconditionally, as the ICC directed nearly 16, 17 months ago, unconditionally released the hostages. The Hamas does what the provisional IRA did. They announced the war is over. They agree to the decommissioning of their arms, and they agree to an alternative Palestinian administration within Gaza that does not include Hamas. That could have been decided a long time ago. Had Iran directed them to do it, they would have had no choice but to do it. But instead, what has happened is you constantly make this fake presentation that in some way Israel can magically end this particular conflict. They can't insert.
But I don't think that, the presentation is the suggestion that they can end the conflict, but rather that they can wage the war in a way that doesn't cause the death of 55,000 civilians.
Well, firstly, there's serious question marks around those stats, which come from the Hamas Health Authority, which contain no references of any description to deceased combatants. But let's deal with the really important issue, because it's probably the one thing Lynn and I would agree with. It's of huge importance that civilians in Gaza not engaged in the conflict have all the food and medical aid and assistance that they require. And again, what's missing from Simon Harris's article today, Lynn's narrative, is that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, in the last 3 weeks, has distributed 33.5 million meals. And they've done it at locations where 572,640 boxes were handed out. And yes, there have been deaths.
Okay.
And the Palestinian Authority newspaper this morning criticised Hamas for shooting civilians in Gaza who are going to get food aid because they want to control the distribution.
You've criticised Lynn's narrative, so I do
need
to allow her to respond. Yes,
well, first, the Gaza Humanitarian Fund, again, does not comply with the way that you deploy humanitarian aid internationally.
33 million meals in 3 weeks,
they have, yes, and every single day people have been slaughtered, and the IDF have admitted that they have shot at people trying to access that food. I have met with people with disabilities in Gaza. I have met with children who have been completely orphaned and have lost all of their family. They're expected to trek for kilometres at a time to put themselves at risk to then collect a box, and if they have a disability, how they're supposed to carry that box back while being shot at. It leaves them open to looting, and looting is absolutely wrong and can't be justified. The UN is the body that should be delivering the aid in the Gaza Strip, and UNRWA has a role not just around delivering the aid but also about the right to return and responsibility for the refugees. And UNRWA is being undermined again by Israel to try and destabilise Gaza. Allow UNRWA to do its job, allow that aid to get in, and stop the mercenary US-led Gaza Humanitarian Fund, which is slaughtering people, and it's become normalised that every single day people are getting shot.
You do know the UN has been invited to coordinate and cooperate with this foundation.
They're not going to,
and some of the trucks that were attacked in the last few days were UN
with an illegal organisation. An organisation that
I do need to take a break.
People.
One of the things that we're going to do later on in the programme is we're going to have a look at the American reaction, because there is already significant political criticism in America of the decision to get involved. And of course, the Iranians suggesting that the American administration have deceived their electorate by virtue of this. There is other news that we do need to address coming up after the break. Suggestions that there may be further issues with cervical check smear tests, because one solicitor representing a number of plaintiffs suggests that inaccurate tests has led to them being in a terrible situation. With me is Alan Shatter, former Minister for Justice, Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent. Interesting story in the front of the Sunday Times, worrying story in the front of the Sunday Times. After all of the cervical check revelations, one personal injury lawyer who represents a number of people involved in the cervical check issue is saying there's more.
Yes, so this is Keane O'Carroll. He was the solicitor who represented Vicky Phelan in the High Court when she exposed this scandal back in 2018. So this is a story by Claire Scott in the Sunday Times, where she says that three women have died of cancer and at least seven more have had a positive diagnosis after their smear tests were allegedly were misread, essentially, despite what you were saying, the overhaul of cervical check.
So they got an all clear, and subsequently it was discovered they had cancer,
according to the report. And then these smears that they were read as recently as 2021, so between 2018 and 2021, and that's when we would have hoped that things would have changed with cervical check. And we do have, there are statements from the HSE and cervical check that they maintain that there's the quality assurance standards, that the final report from Gabriel Scott. Dr. Gabriel Scally in 2022 said there was an excellent system of quality assurance. I think you can hear those statements all you like, but when you're a woman and you read a story like this in the paper, cervical check yet again, I think it just undermines confidence completely.
And that, Lynn, is the critical thing, is that the confidence requires that the many are willing to get cervical checked, and that it saves so many people. And if you undermine that and people think either what's the point or I don't trust it, that is a huge impact.
No, absolutely. I mean, and it is something, it's one of those procedures that nobody really likes going to get done. So, I mean, you really want to encourage women to go and have the smears done and the cervical check and to have confidence in the system. So this will put the fear of God into people waking up this morning to hear that we're now having a situation where it's been repeated. But it also feeds into the broader narrative about trust in our health service. When you're looking at what's happening with CHI, and the hip operations and the use of unauthorised equipment in scoliosis treatment. So it's just, it's that drip feed now of, can I trust what the consultant is saying to either about my own treatment or about my child's treatment? And that's really, really concerning if people don't have trust in the health system, because we need people to go, and particularly those preventative treatments. Do you mean that going and getting the screening is so, so important? So it is really, really concerning to see that this is now history repeating itself.
And one of the things, Tabitha, that is suggested is that the lawyer in question is saying that he has written to the relevant departments and to, I think, Simon Harris in this instance, effectively hasn't got much in the way of a guarantee of action.
Yes, so he wrote to the Fine Gael leader in relation to 8 cases of women that he is representing who allege to have suffered serious harm from the negligence in reading their cervical smears. So I think you have that, and then there's, and I think what Lynn is saying is absolutely right, that it is that trust piece, that you have to have absolute trust because you have no choice. You go and you do these smears. They are not comfortable. You do not want to do them, but you do them because the likes of Vicky Phelan was such a fantastic campaigner, and you say, well, if she did it, we need to be doing it as well. We need to be getting those tests. There was also something that was brought up in the Dáil earlier in the week in relation to the catch-up scheme for the HPV vaccine. So this is for a lot of it was rolled out in schools, but there was a scheme that was
which
put
has
in
had
place.
The most remarkable public mm-hmm. health effect. I mean, one of the most significant public health interventions in human history.
Yeah, and Roger Gregorman, the Green Party TD, he has brought up whether or not this is going to be continued, when it's going to start again, this catch-up scheme for those people who would it kind of fell through the cracks where you mightn't have got it in school, that they will be given the opportunity to do that. And he's saying that he isn't able to get clarification on when this scheme is going to be rolled out. He's asked the Taoiseach, he asked it in the Dáil, and he also asked the Taoiseach there a few days ago, and neither of them were able to give clear clarification of when this scheme is going to be rolled out. So you have this, and then when there's a scheme and there's a vaccine there that can help so many people's lives, you just wonder, where's the messaging here?
If you want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents, or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp.
Anton, can I just make one comment on this? Because, look, we have a deeply dysfunctional health service. Every few weeks, some revelation of something. And in the context of cervical smear tests, we've gone through many years of difficulty. And many of the women who were originally victims of a failure to properly read their tests had to go through hell and back to get the truth, to discover really what the problem was, and to get the state to accept accountability and the HSE to accept accountability. Now, I've known Jennifer Carroll a long time. She and I have had no recent contact. And she's a person who is health minister, I'd expect, to be very diligent in pursuing this issue. And the particular cases mentioned in today's paper preceded her time as minister. But there's one point really worth making that we haven't yet made. If there are new cases that are now initiated going to the courts, and if there are 8 women who have been tragically impacted by a failure to properly read their smears, who are at serious risk as a consequence, this should not be straddled out through 2 or 3 years in a court process. There should be absolute transparency from the medics involved and the HSE and the company involved in the testing, so that very rapidly they know the full truth of what's happened. And if there's an accountability to be accepted, be it by the HSE or the company that conducted the testing and read the tests, or both, that they accept responsibility.
And are they not constrained by patient confidentiality and data protection? Is that not a difficult thing for organisations?
In the context of individual cases, if I'm a woman who's been through this and I have this terrible stress and worry of what's happened and I feel the need to go to court, I have a right and should be regarded as having a right to full disclosure. What often happens in these instances is it takes 2 or 3 years of multiple court applications to get access to information and documentation for doctors or whoever, it may not be medics, whoever the scientists are who carried out, produced the results from the smear tests, for it to be admitted that there was a failure. So what I'm saying, they should fast track accountability and transparency issues so that these individuals who have their own health issues to deal with don't have the added worry of ongoing litigation.
Yeah, particularly given that many of the plaintiffs in this question may have stage 3 and stage 4 mm-hmm. cancer.
Yes.
Lynn, one final thing that I wanted to get your view on. There's a number of columnists across the Sunday papers querying, and I think this falls from something that Cathy Sheridan wrote during the week in the Irish Times, querying, have we got ourselves into a weird corner with the presidential election where the process to get elected is so brutal that now a whole load of perfectly reasonable candidates who would be good for the democratic process are looking at it and saying, not in a fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, why would you put yourself through a campaign like that where it's not even just about your own background and they will be going trawling through? Do you know what I mean? Thankfully, there was no social media when I was very younger, but like they'll be trawling through your past, but also your family, your wider extended family's past and everything. So I just don't understand.
In a way that is irrelevant to the end job.
Irrelevant to the end job, absolutely. But I also think it's interesting. I'd heard the strategy being used by Fine Gael is that while it's likely that it will be Mairead McGuinness as their candidate, that Sean Kelly will put his name in the running. So that will delay the decision until September. Because if it's only one candidate, well then the game begins. Yeah.
And Mairead McGuinness herself said that she was making the decision by the end of May. So she knows herself whether or not she's putting her name forward. She just hasn't said.
So I think there is that at play that people are like, the shorter the campaign, the better, and find ways to delay even selecting your candidate.
By putting up a second, you at least
Because I think July is the date for nominees, but then if you have a contested candidate, then you have to have a process, which would then bring you over the summer into September.
Any interest, Alan?
Not personally, no. But the one aspect of all of this that we have to look at, good people like David Norris and A.D. Roach and Declan Ganley were practically destroyed during the course of these presidential election campaigns. And indeed, Declan Ganley would have won when he ran, if not for false allegations made against him at the very last minute. I'm wondering, will he be a candidate? Everyone's focusing on parties. I'm wondering, will he be a candidate? But the one thing with social media that both the media and the political establishment need to be careful of, on social media, every lunatic can make crazy allegations about individuals. And the important thing is that no serious politician, nor indeed no serious side of the media, run with allegations.
Okay.
Unless there's serious
corroboration.
Unless there's serious corroboration.
We have reached a level of mutual warmth. Let's keep with it. Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, Alan Shatter, former Justice Minister. Tab the Mana and political reporter with the Irish Independent. Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.